Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
That's not generally how we'd probably start the show, but we did want to say hello to a friend who we've had on before. And if you actually know your music history at all, I don't know, did you recognize that song, Brian?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Yes, they're a cultural phenomenon.
You are pretty sharp, so we're going to find out about one of the, probably the top group in music history. I guess there was Elvis, and then there were the Beatles, and the former U.S. manager of Apple Records, sort of personally working with the Beatles for a number of years, is our guest today. Ken Mansfield, Grammy Award-winning record producer, and he's executive for several record labels, songwriter, author of four books, working on a couple others, including The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay. And he's also written, last time we talked about his book, Stumbling on Open Ground, where he tells a little bit about his experience, love, God, cancer, and rock and roll. So we'll probably cover most of those topics in some order. But Ken, we'll let him sort of unpack the story a little bit, but was part of a Southern California folk group called the Town Criers, which I understand you listen online?
I found them on YouTube.
Okay.
They were exceptional.
And then kind of got into the music industry, became an executive in Hollywood and Nashville, worked at Capitol Records, and had the opportunity to become the U.S. manager for Apple record label when that took place. And so he's got a lot of experiences. It's the 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming to the U.S., and we're happy to have Ken back with us. Ken, glad to have you back on Connecting Faith.
Always my pleasure, Neil. Good to talk to you again.
I thought we'd review a little bit of the story, because you're actually the Beatles, the Bible, and Bodega Bay, the subtitle My Long and Winding Road, really I think was, at least Ringo thought that was what the only official kind of documentary, I guess, if you will, or story about the experiences they've had, right?
Well, that's the only book outside of their own anthology that all four Beatles have approved. Of course, it was Yoko on John's behalf, because he had already passed on, and all the managers and all the agents. And it started with Ringo. Ringo was the first one to give it his blessing, and then it was kind of a nice domino effect, of getting everybody on board. But I was told by Bruce Kakel, who is on the board of directors of Apple and very involved with the Beatles' careers to this day, that the reason they approved it is because most people write books about the Beatles, and they just use the Beatles, and they've never approved them. But my book, Ringo's, I was told Bruce that the reason they approved it was my story, but I included them in my story. So, but even though it's all about the Beatles, they liked the fact that I was really telling my story, and they were, part of my story, obviously. Yeah. A giant part of my story. A whole book's worth about part of my story.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing story, and yeah. I thought we'll unpack it a little bit as we go on today, because it'll just be kind of fun to hear again, because you God has done an amazing work in your life, and not only spiritually, but physical healing as well, and we want to get into that. But I want to go back maybe to when you left Idaho, got into you were in the folk group, the Town Criers. I'm wondering, was the music, pursuing some sort of singing music career? Was that something you wanted to do a long time ago?
Well, I think so, but I didn't know that. I never actually dreamed that I could be involved with something so exciting and so much fun and make a living. Making music, And I was in college during the folk craze when the whole Kingston Trio thing started. And, of course, we all had our little groups in college and in our fraternity, and we just started playing, you know, fraternity parties and whatever, and mainly for, you know, pizza and stuff. And just eventually we got pretty good, and then we started playing clubs, and we got discovered by some Hollywood and Beverly Hills talent managers. And that got me started in the business. It just started as a fluke. And at the time, I was working full-time during the day at the space program. I mean, I had a Bachelor of Science degree, and I was doing computerized time programming for the space program. And so, you know, I had no idea that I was going to end up in the music business other than just having fun with my fraternity brothers. And you know, I love music. And so...
Wow.
It just evolved, yeah.
You could have been you know, the first singing astronaut or something, maybe.
So, no. Yeah. No, you're not getting me one of those things. I'm claustrophobic.
Okay,
I've
all right.
thought about that. No way.
Oh, you know, you became part of Capitol Records, working there in the 60s, and we'll just run by some of the artists that you worked with.
Sure.
Stan Kenton, Peggy Lee, George Shearing, the Four Freshmen, Nancy Wilson, Judy Garland, Lou Rawls, Glenn Campbell, Bobby Gentry, Al Martino. I mean, it just kind of goes on. But I'm interested in, we can, you know, maybe if you want to highlight some of those or others. But you were became a music producer would be your title, right?
Right.
And I'm wondering, what does that mean in a sort of a day-to-day experience? Does that mean that you're just doing the kind of the layout and design or paperwork, or are you actually, arranging music? What does that look like?
Okay, don't leave that question, because I kind of want to address what you brought up with that whole era. Probably most of your listeners never heard of these people, but they were the legendary artists back then. And I think the thing that worked for me over time in the music business, I didn't realize that my education was being built way back then, and that's kind of the way God does things, even when we're not looking, you know. But I came out of high school when rock broke forth. You know, I came out of high school with Elvis Presley and Bill Haley and the Comets and Carl Perkins and all that rockabilly thing. And so I grew up, I came out of, at that time, our rebellion music in school was jazz. And then when rockabilly and rock came, we moved to that. And that, during that time, those artists you mentioned were the big artists of the time, though. Rockabilly broke through in rock and roll. And then from there, you know, it went into the next phase, which was, of course, the British rock and all the other kinds of formats. But the point I'm making is I grew up through every phase of music. And so when the time came for me to be a producer, I had all this stuff in the back of my mind, you know, that I just had absorbed over the years without realizing it. And I think that really helped me in my music business, because I had a pretty broad understanding of the industry. And my time with the Town Criers gave me an understanding for artists and what it's like to be an artist. And for a brief period of time, I had a folk club in San Diego, and I really understood a lot about the road part of the business. You know, it's just all these things were building up. But a producer is what I really wanted to be. And in answer to that question, a producer is like a director in the movie. And as a producer, you may select the artist, you may select the songs, you may be selecting the arrangements and the musicians and the concept and the album packaging. It can be everything. It really depends on the artist you're working with. You know, if, like when I was producing Waylon, Waylon brought that outlaw music, you know, to the table, and I didn't need to fool with that. Because, I mean, his thing was so magic, Waylon Jennings. And but I brought to the table my British rock and roll sensibility, so that's what I offered to the sessions. And we would pick the songs together, and so that was more of a 50-50 arrangement. I had other artists that I did everything, and then some artists that I did almost nothing other than just make sure we made a good record. So.
And is that a matter of just the personality, or has that become sort of and I'm sure it's probably different now than even it was then in terms of, you know, artistic license. But, was it just a matter of you get along with this artist, and so we'll allow them more freedom?
Well, you, what happened is, I think the greatest part of being a producer is being kind of like a psychologist or psychiatrist, whatever. You really need to understand your artist. You need to understand their heart. You need to understand their talents. You need to work to their good points. So you become really, you just really have to get inside the person. And the artist senses. That's why an artist works with a producer. They'll either hear the producer's work or meet the producer and talk, and there's just something that you can tell, yeah, we can do something together. It's a pretty intricate process, you know, the producer-artist relationship. And once you go into a project, making an album can take from a month or to a year, or, you know, you've heard of people working on albums for 2 years. You become such a part of each other's lives that I've always felt every time I finished an album, I'd actually kind of given up a piece of myself. That it's so dramatic in a way, and sometimes traumatic, you know. But it's a pretty heavy emotional experience. Every artist I produced, you know, we are bound together by that process for the rest of our lives.
Well, the artist that perhaps Ken is most noted for is to get to understand and to work with the Beatles. He became he was the U.S. manager for Apple Records, and we're going to hear a little bit more about that story. Before we take a break, though, I was just curious, do you ever get in discussions about, is it the lyric or is it the melody that captures your attention when you're listening to a song? What makes a great song?
Well, it can be both. In country music, I think the lyric is more dominant, and I know some really pop songs that I just love, and I've never really stopped to listen that close to the lyric, because it was really maybe the musicianship and the arrangement and just the dynamics of the material. So each song just has its own reason that people are attracted to it. But the country people, it's all about the lyrics usually. You know, that's how that started.
Ken Mansfield, back in the 70s, left his the corporate world, set up his own company, Hometown Productions, and he helped popularize the outlaw movement in country music. We mentioned Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter and others, and there were other artists like David Cassidy and Andy Williams, the Flying Burrito Brothers, and much more. We're gonna jump back and hear a bit more about his story, though, because Ken has a long and winding road of his faith journey, and we'll get into that and more. Talk a bit about the Beatles and enjoy a few Beatle bumpers. All that just ahead here on Connecting Faith. Glad to have you listening here to Faith Radio. Our phone number is 877-933-2484.
It's not just information, it's transformation.
I love Faith Radio because it is very uplifting and it allows me to become closer to God because God is speaking through these people. If I have a good day, it makes me thankful that I know God and I can worship and praise Him. If I'm having a bad day, I have faith that God will help me.
Connecting faith to life every day. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio.
There's a place to grow in your faith and share hope with friends and family, with practical resources and insight for your daily life, and it's right at your fingertips. At MyFaithRadio.com, find the latest podcasts from Faith Radio's original programs. Encourage someone through prayer on PrayerWorks, or be challenged by the latest from our Faith Radio blogging team. It's just a small slice of what's available to you at MyFaithRadio.com. Log on today to find it's not just information, it's transformation.
It's not your typical bumper music here on Connecting Faith, but it seems appropriate as we talk today with Ken Mansfield, who can speak and write authoritatively about the music business, because he was there making it happen. And he found himself propelled to the center of this kind of whirlwind when the Beatles asked him to be the U.S. manager of their Apple record label, as well as acting as their personal liaison between the U.K. and the U.S. And there's a point in the story in The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay, My Long and Winding Road, which Ken has written about his story and the intersection with the Beatles, that he had almost had an opportunity to be a part of writing some of the lyric to Obla Dee Obla Da. I mean, you probably have to tell that story, and then we'll go back to hear a little bit more of the beginning. But so you, it was an almost a moment there for you, Ken.
Yeah, it's almost a kind of a sort of and kind of a moment. It was when we were setting up Apple Records. We snuck Paul into the country to surprise the Capitol employees that we were indeed going to be distributing Apple, and the Beatles were going to, you know, be involved, very involved with this label, and they were we were going to allow them to be on the label because they were Capitol artists, and that was one of the negotiations that we had with them. But anyway, so Paul had come in the country, and we're doing a whole bunch of things, some having to do with the label, and just a lot of real private time. I'd gotten him a bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and so one evening, we had finished up our activities, and we're just hanging around, just him and I in the bungalow, and he's got a guitar, and he's kind of noodling on some stuff, and he starts working on some songs. So I'm sitting there, and he's working on Obla Dee Obla Da and Back to the USSR, and he was reworking Blackbird. But so he said, "Well, what do you think of this?" And I go, "Well, yeah, or what about that or something?" And it was just kind of a very natural, you know, dialogue. And I left that evening, and I was driving across Mulholland Drive on my way home, and I went, "Wait a minute, was I just songwriting with Paul McCartney?" You know, and because it was a pretty typical, like when you are co-writing with somebody. And so when the songs came out, they said Lennon McCartney, and I'm in London with Paul afterwards, and I said, "You know, I was kind of curious on that because John wasn't around when you wrote those. And, I didn't expect it to be Mansfield McCartney, but I was kind of surprised to see John's name on there when I know he wasn't around." And Paul said something that's one of the most interesting things that I've heard over the years from them is he said, "When I write," he said, "Paul and I, or John and I, are so close. We've spent so much time, gone through so much together, have written so much." He said, "I can be off someplace writing by myself, and it's almost like I can hear John over my shoulder say, 'Hey, no, Paul, that's not going to work. Why don't you try this?'" Or he said, "I can just see John's involvement with me on the song." So he said, in essence, I am always writing with John Lennon. So.
You had an almost moment, though.
So, That was my almost, sort of, kind of, in a way, moment.
But you, I mean, these guys were, whether you're into pop culture or not, I mean, they really changed the face of music, 50 years ago coming to the U.S. I think, as you're talking about your book, they were a good band. I mean, they weren't just good guys, but they were a good band, right?
They were, in fact. I represented Ringo. The relationship stayed on even after I quit working with him, because that one position I had was more or less informal, but I became their personal liaison between the UK and the United States, which meant if somebody wanted to sneak in the country, or if Patty Harrison wanted to go shopping, or just their personal stuff. But I represented Ringo later on in the 90s, and when we sat down at a restaurant one night to discuss what the album concept was going to be, he said, "I want to start from this point on constructing this album." He said, "The reason the Beatles became so famous," he said, "it's really simple." He said, "We were a good band." He said, "It's that simple." So he said, "I want to put together a really good band for this album." And I thought that was some really nice insight to how they saw themselves, you know.
Talk about, I guess, where you were in this, journey. You've been kind of working your way up in the music industry, working at Capitol Records. It's a pretty dynamic time in the 60s.
Right.
Just everything is really popping on the scene. Suddenly, you're a liaison there with the Beatles, the hottest band of the century. So, were you pursuing fame and fortune? Was that something that you were looking at, say, "Hey, this is really going to launch me"? Or, and did you have any sort of spiritual interest at that time?
No, the spiritual thing never was a discussion between us, anyway. I mean, I know they got off into the Maharishi thing, but Jesus was never mentioned, and maybe if he was or if people did approach us, which I'm sure they did, we just probably slept them off, and I certainly wasn't interested at the time either. But as far as a career move, I didn't realize it was at the time, and there was so much innocence, and even to use the word innocence with the Beatles and even myself at that time seems a little odd, but none of us really had an idea what was happening during that time. I had no concept. I personally thought that they were just going to be really famous for a while, and then pretty soon they would fade away like every other band, and then I would say I used to work with the Beatles, and they would go, were they a band from England, or something like that. But we had no concept, and I had no idea that it was going to have something to do with my career. It was my job, and I was just kind of swept up into it. Everything was happening so fast in those days. Society was changing. The youth was changing. The Beatles were changing the way you dressed, your hair. The mores of the time were being, everything was just in total. The drug thing was coming on, the whole sex, drugs, rock and roll, the new age thing was coming in and all that. And we were just overwhelmed because most of us, just like I did, I came out of Indian reservation lands up in northern Idaho, man. I was, had no idea that was going to be part of my life, all that stuff. So it was pretty amazing. The 60s and into the 70s for all of us. And none of us really realized what was happening, I don't think.
Well,
Even the Beatles.
Take a few minutes. We have a break coming up here about 3-4 minutes or so. But let's start with a little bit about your faith journey as you talk about your long and winding road. I mean, that I don't think I have that bumper here, but that was, for many people it was that case. But for you, question, no doubt about that.
Well, what happened to a lot of us, and I'll just try to be really succinct here, and it's pretty common, is, as I say, we start believing our own press releases, and we just think that all this stuff is going to go on forever, and we get very involved in a lot of things that we shouldn't have as far as, drugs and just we just became a little bit crazy. And for me, I was very successful for quite a while, but one day, It did all fall apart, and I lost everything. I even lost my credibility, I think. So from the bottom is where I found the Lord, and I know this is a story that's a story for everybody. I don't care whether you're a Volkswagen salesman or whatever your occupation is. We're all the same when it comes to that point when we're all alone in a dark room, crying out and trying to figure out what happened to us. And so I tell, when I speak, I tell people that I thank God every day for the circumstances that drew me to Him, and because I would have never come to the Lord if I would have just maintained the level of success I had and all that. So,
it was something that sort of was, I guess, dropped upon you, as opposed to it wasn't something that you were pursuing, right?
Because I certainly didn't choose. Yeah. And that's what the Beatles Bible in Bodega Bay book kind of came about, because I basically ended up on the California North Shores up there, walking along the beach, trying to talk to God. I said, "What happened to me? Here I was on top of the world. I was on the roof with the Beatles. I was involved with all these legendary people. Now I'm up here on the washed up on the beach." And so in the Beatles Bible in Bodega Bay, I was having these conversations with God, and I was writing them down. And then I thought, maybe if I go back and look at that young man who was with the Beatles on the roof and all these kind of things, maybe if I can write about him for a while and write about that whole Beatle phenomenon, maybe I can kind of put the two together, the older guy washed up on the beach and the young guy on top of the world. And that was the basis of the book. So the book is half my spiritual walk and half just really inside stories and pictures about the Beatles.
It's well written, and you'll enjoy it. The Beatles, the Bible, and Bodega Bay. Subtitles: The Long and My Long and Winding Road. It's from Ken Mansfield, and we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like, the benefits of walking on the beach along the ocean shore. I know Ken has some thoughts about that, and we'll get to that and more as we talk with Ken. Ken's a Grammy Award-winning record producer, former U.S. manager of Apple Records, executive for several record labels, a songwriter, authored several books, including The Beatles, The Bible, Bodega Bay. He wrote The White Book, The Beatles, The Bands, and The Biz, An Insider's Look at an Era. And Between Wyomings and Stumbling on Open Ground, Love, God, Cancer, and Rock and Roll. We'll talk more with Ken Mansfield, having a great conversation today here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned. Scrambling for their dials, go, what happened? I just got on that outlaw country station or somehow. No,
where
this
are
is,
we?
Yeah, it's Faith Radio. It's Connecting Faith. That was a little bit of Waylon Jennings. That was one of his top albums. Are You Ready for the Country? Back when Ken Mansfield moved away from the Capitol Records and working there and kind of another chapter in his life, started Hometown Productions and helped popularize the outlaw movement in country music. Waylon Jennings, Jesse Coulter, had a number of others. He worked with artists of really all stripes and shapes, and perhaps best known for, at least has written about, his time as a U.S. manager of Apple Records, and so kind of personal liaison for the Beatles. And the book we've been referencing today, The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay, My Long and Winding Road. And Ken, you just touched a little bit about your story and being sort of, you know, washed up in the beach in Northern California. And I know that you, the book is a lot about those walks on the beach. I'm interested, you're a fan of the ocean. What can a walk on the beach do for our understanding of God's greatness? How did that maybe start to change your perspective?
You know, there's the core of that for me, and it's something, in fact, I mentioned this in the book, is I'm down there, and when you're on the beach and there's nobody else on the beach, and the beaches in Northern California are just so dramatic. I mean, it's just overwhelming. And of course, there's the technical thing of the negative ions, which do help make you feel better. But it's just the magnificence of God's creation is so in your face, and you realize this oneness with Him. You're in the midst of His creation. There's nothing else around you. And the thing I mentioned in my book about that, when I was talking to God, I would walk right up to the edge of the water, looking out across the Pacific, and I would realize I'm talking to God right now, and there's nobody or nothing between me and Him. You know, there's no traffic, no people, no buildings, no nothing, no other ideas. It's just down to me and Him. And I think that's where, in that book, that I really drew my emotions and my conversations with Him became so real. And it was, by the way, when I was coming up from the ocean after these conversations and going to my little computer and just writing down what I talked to God about that day, and I had no idea. I was not writing a book. And then I mentioned earlier about, then I decided to write about me and the Beatles, and that's what the book came about with the book. But when I had a publisher interested in the book was going to be published, I went, wait a minute, this is a little embarrassing. I didn't realize, you know, because I was pretty open about my thoughts and what was going on with me in the book. And the ocean.
Well, you have, because you were really at the top, and as you said, it all came crashing down. You know, we hear from sometimes people, you know, at the top of that, you know, worldly success doesn't bring satisfaction. I thought, about what, was that the case for you, or were you quite happy to continue it going until it sort of got knocked out from under you?
Well, it did get knocked out from under me, and there's, I'll give you an example of how that works. I had this estate up in the Hollywood Hills, and it was this magnificent place up there. And I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm going, wait a minute, what's going on here? I was married to a rather well-known actress at the time. I had a number one record on the charts. We were hanging out with the rich and the famous. You know, we're just on top of the world. And I'm sitting there going, why am I so unhappy? And there was these French doors just off to the side of my desk there. And I went out in these French doors and had a little patio that I looked out across Laurel Canyon. And I sat there and I'm going, why do I feel so empty? Many years later, when I was speaking at a large church, the pastor asked me, he said, well, did you ever realize before that emptiness of not having God in your life? And man, that moment just flashed in my face. I'd never thought about it, because what had happened that day is I recognized that just that haunting emptiness that was inside of me, but I didn't know what to fill it up with at the time. And then I realized when he asked me that question that I had filled it up, you know, with Jesus. And so I forgot what your question
was.
Well,
no, we're just talking about worldly success.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that,
yeah.
You know, that.
So obviously I wasn't happy when I had it all, because that was the point, you know. I'd pretty much been, you know. And so, yeah, there's a difference.
You kind of zoned out. You start thinking about Laurel Canyon, and then you start thinking about Bodega Bay and walking on the beach. And, you know, we're just kind of. Ryan should have brought out the music. We could have just kind of drifted along here and had a really nice moment here or something.
Yeah.
You know, you've experienced both the kind of financial and career lows and health lows. And I know the last time we talked about your the diagnosis, actually more than once, about the terminal cancer. I'm wondering if, you know, were there similarities in those kind of, you know, hitting bottom experiences?
Well, yeah, and they're absolutely, because again, I said, it doesn't matter what business you're in when you go through these things or what your life story is. When you get down to the bottom, it's just you and God. You know, you're all alone when it comes to that moment. And I think in this case, it's the same thing, because I've always thought about, well, how did this happen to me? If I you know, I grew up poor. I grew up with hardly anything. And then when I lost everything, I was back to that point. And I thought, this is just how masterful God is in the way he works. Because if I'd have gone from being poor in Idaho straight across to being poor on the beach in Northern California, I wouldn't have even thought anything about it. But it was almost like he orchestrated this, having me go up and just be all the way up on top. And then when I came back down and crashed on the bottom, the contrast was so bizarre that it did make me think about things, you know. So I just, I've got so many stories that I've written about just how these things seem so impossible, the way God works things. But when you start understanding them, then you can look back across your life and go, oh yeah, now I see God in this all the time. I see God protected me here. I see God let me go through this here. And I didn't realize what he was, you know, the tapestry he was weaving all this time in my life.
You were an executive in Southern California in the Hollywood area at Los Angeles, ended up in kind of washed up on the beach, as you say. You ended up going to Nashville. Talk about a little bit about that journey and what that was like.
Well, that was from the beach. That's where I are from the Northern California. Is I had decided, you know, my life's falling apart here. I'm going to go back to Nashville, Tennessee, because I did spend quite a bit of time there, and I was, you know, very successful with the whole outlaw movement. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go back to Nashville and pick up where I left off. And I went back to Nashville, and that's when the whole, you know, outlaw thing happened, and met Waylon, and we just clicked. And so there, and you know, the funny thing is, I'm continuing the theme here, is I got to Nashville and I couldn't even remember making my plane reservations or getting to the airport or all. I just felt like I was transported, moved from one spot to the other. And then again, looking back, I can see that that was the next part of my personal puzzle that God was putting together. Because I don't think if I'd have thought through it, I would have even done it. You know?
And you've had experiences where God has continued to direct. And I want to, you know, let you talk a little bit about the your book that we chatted about last time, about Stumbling on Open Ground. It's the trial, the test of a cancer diagnosis. And that was, you know, sort of after everything else, then this. Now, that must have been kind of a hard blow.
Well, it was, because, you know, okay, come on, what's next? You know, I get it. I get it. This is another trial. But that's a whole different level, because there you're going through physical pain. You're going through so many things. And I had a couple cancers, and one was extremely dramatic and extremely scary and just horrible. And what I did is, in stumbling on open ground, is basically I addressed a thing about what happens when you really face a deep, dark, horrible trial like I went through. Is, you know, are you going to just still keep trusting God through this or not? And kind of a theme in that book was me holding on to my belief and telling God I'm going to trust him no matter what. And the theme of the thing was believing in a God you're having a hard time believing in, you know, or doubting a God that you really don't doubt. It's just that you just can't figure out what's going on with you. And so it's just questioning a God that really has all the answers. It's almost like I feel that my life has been extremes, and everything that has happened in my life has been extreme. And I don't know if that's just God's purpose. You know, there's so many people that have come to the Lord because of my books. And my books are not—they're about my spiritual walk, but they're also about, you know, time in the business and other things like that too. So it just appeals to a lot of people that maybe normally wouldn't read a Christian book like the Beatles, the Bible, and Bodega Bay, but they buy the book to read about the Beatles, and they have to wade through some other stuff, like
sure.
I say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking actually, just looking at the book again, there's a scene in the. It's the movie I Walk the Line. I think the story of Johnny Cash, you know, and he goes, he's trying to, you know, cut a record, and he's got his little group together, and the producer there is saying, look, you know, everybody's doing this sort of Jimmy Davis gospel thing. He said, if you had, you know, one opportunity to sing, I mean, tell me one thing that you want, you know, the world to know before you pass on. And that, maybe that's part of it, Ken, is that sort of living in the extreme. I mean, that's probably what makes a good song too, right? There's
yeah.
that edge of maybe emotion or passion there that so connects with everybody.
Oh, it does. And that's where, you know, all your great songs come. All your great songs really come out of elation or pain, mainly. You just don't sit down and write a song as a songwriter when nothing's really happening inside of you. You write out of pain, or you write out of joy. You write out of the extreme emotions in your life, and that's where the great songs come from.
I know that you're as a music guy, and of course you were an engineer kind of before that, so you're kind of a linear fellow, right? So, I mean, your life probably hasn't really gone in that sort of linear fashion, right? Has that been a challenge for you?
Well, it has been. And like even I talked about, you know, cancer, you know, everybody thinks, okay, somebody gets cancer, and then they find out they have the cancer, and they're disappointed, and then they get sick, and then they pray, and then they get well, and then everybody rejoices, you know. And the cancer and life, it's not quite that linear. You know, you'd almost, okay, if I'm going to get cancer, then I want that thing, I'm going to have a great testimony, and it's all going to be great afterwards. And, you know, it's not always like that, and life's not always like that. And so you're right. I think a lot of time our frustration is we try to make our life linear. I go here, and then I go here, and then I go there, and then this happens. And then when God maybe has a couple detours for us, then we don't know what to do about it.
Well, because, I mean, you need a verse and a chorus and a coda and all those things, right?
Exactly. So I need an intro, a verse, a chorus, and a tag ending.
Yeah, yeah.
And my life.
So how's what part are we in at the moment, Ken? Maybe that's the question, huh?
Well, I'm obviously in the tag ending. God has placed me in a place I never expected to be in. I never expected to be an author. I never expected to be on the road speaking at churches. And, of course, some of my old buddies in the music business, when we hook back up with each other, they go, "You're what? You're a minister? Are you kidding?" You know. So God also has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And
Well, we're talking today with Ken Mansfield about his long and winding road. He's written about it in the book The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay. And we're talking a little bit more with Ken about the Beatles and more about faith and that journey. Coming up in a moment, invite you to stay tuned here to Connecting Faith.
Faith. Faith Radio is good news you can count on.
Have compassion on the one who has hurt you. Be kind to one another. Use your pain as fuel for compassion. When Christ saw the crowd, you remember what? He had compassion on them. Why? Because they were sheep without a shepherd. They didn't even know they were lost. They had no clue. And the person who sinned against you may still be like that today.
It's not just information. It's transformation. Faith Radio.
Are you new to Faith Radio? Have you been listening for a long time? We'd love to get better acquainted. And to do that, we've designed something very special with you in mind. It is the free Faith Radio Welcome Packet. It tells you a little bit about Faith Radio, who we are, what we believe, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest and around the world through the Internet. It's yours free for the asking. It is our new Welcome Packet at myfaithradio.com.
We're talking today about the Beatles, the Bible, and Bodega Bay, Ken Mansfield's story, My Long and Winding Road. It was, February 64, right, when they came 50 years this year.
Right.
And did you watch the special? Wasn't there, there was the
Ed Sullivan?
Ed Sullivan special, yeah.
Well, I watched. Are you talking about the Grammy special?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did, and it was funny because it put me in touch with a lot of people back from those days, because a lot of us had mixed reactions to that. There were segments that we really liked, and there were segments that we were wondering, what were they thinking of? So, yeah. But all in all, it was pretty good, you know. And I think it gave a lot of people maybe who weren't aware of that era or things that happened, kind of gave them a little bit of insight.
Because the group had, as I mean, in terms of the decade, still it's pretty amazing that there's still that much sort of, I guess, influence from these group of four guys.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I keep wondering when it's going to get over with, but I'll have like 11-year-old kids come up and ask me for my autograph when they find out I was with the Beatles, you know, and I keep wondering when is this going to end. And I was doing a book signing at a bookstore, and the whole front row were like these 11, 13-year-old girls. And I said, what are you guys doing here? And they said, well, when I was growing up, you know, Mom was making breakfast for us before school, and she was playing Beatle music, and then we'd get in the car, and Dad would drive us to school, and he was playing Beatle music, and we just went to a Paul McCartney concert last week, and it's the best concert we ever saw, and so that's why we're here,
yeah.
You know?
Do you still connect with Ringo or Paul at all, or?
It's been a while. Yeah. It's not like we fell apart. It's just that we drifted apart because, you know, I'm in the ministry and they're still rocking. But yeah. I was Ringo's guest here about 3 or 4 years ago at one of his concerts, and you know, because he and I just our whole lives played out together. I mean, our failed marriages and our problems with drugs and just everything that happened, we just kind of went through it together. And, we, you know, we've known each other since we're in our 20s. So we have quite a lot of history together. And so it's been a very natural thing with me and with him especially. Paul has sent messages to me, you know, over the time and things like that. But
did you have a sense that you know, part of producing these, you know, songs and albums and these great artists, did you ever sense that, you know, this is going to be impactful, or this will just be something fun, or this will get airplay on radio stations? I mean, I know you were kind of working with radio stations for a while too, and just making sure that everybody got the right songs at the right time.
Well, you know, that was always, there's no question our motive at the whole time is to have a hit record. I mean, you really don't go in the studio unless you're looking to have your record played and bought. I mean, that's the whole concept behind it. And so the thing that worked for me, the thing you mentioned that I was a promotion guy for a while, and I knew how the radio stations thought. So when I was making a record, I did it as a marketing guy in a way. I thought, well, we have to have an audience. that we have to have a subject matter that's topical, and we need to do all this and be different from what everybody else is doing at the time. So there are a lot of mechanics and a lot of technical mechanics that aren't so emotional or so creative. You also got to kind of figure out how to play the game.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you listen to music from the 60s and 70s now, or do you just listen to the beach and the waves?
Of course we love our Christian music, but when I listen to a lot of alternative music and the reason I do this is in part as a technician, because the bands today, the young people today, are drawing out of so much history that's gone before. And when I was growing up in the music business, we were more or less creating the different styles and the different, genres of music. But now I'll hear a song by some young group, and I'll hear like six or seven influences. I'll hear everything from Queens to Queen from Roy Orbison to the Beatles to, whatever. Just I'll hear all these influences, and they don't even realize they're doing it. It's just, they're just evolving out of what's gone before. So I find it very interesting.
Some of the names that we could list them off again. I mean, were there one or two that you particularly enjoyed working with, or maybe was it a genre that you especially liked, or just something maybe one or two hits particular, or projects that were just fun to do?
Well, the thing about when I came to the Beatles, they were already famous, and that was incredible working with the Beatles. But with Waylon and the Outlaw Movement, that's something we brought from the ground up. So I think there was a more personal satisfaction in that, in the whole Outlaw thing, and it was totally freeform. We started that thing out, and radio stations wouldn't have anything to do with us. And the whole national community just totally rejected us. And before the whole thing was over, we were having concerts that were drawing like the rock bands, and the radio stations were even changing formats to the Outlaw format. So, I mean, we really proved a point on that. But as a producer, I had two favorite projects of the whole time, and that was David Cassidy, who some of you may have heard of, and he was a superstar, and just something about, we just hit it off. We had the greatest time. And the other one was Don Ho, who was the Elvis Presley of Hawaii.
Sure.
And those were just projects that you just thoroughly got immersed in and just thoroughly had a great time and had this super connection with the artist. And that's the kind of thing that made life great when you're working so hard, is to have that relationship.
A lot of good memories looking back.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Gosh, if I could get a dollar for all my memories,
Yeah. We'd like to take up an offering here, but I've got 50 cents. So Ryan, I don't know if you can contribute something.
What I've do got you got? A pen.
You got a pen? Okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, when I said that, I realized I have gotten a dollar for a lot of my memories from my books.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, so scratch that then, maybe. So, Ken, what's God sort of working on your laying on your heart these days in terms of maybe writing or as you speak? I mean, what seems to be the area where you keep maybe circling back to?
Well, I keep my writing is just all the time for me. The current book that we have just finished, I finished it with a historian, rock and roll, and business, a great historian, and we have gone and interviewed some of the greatest people, rock stars of all time, and put them all together in one book to trace, and these are people that were on top of the world and had similar lives where everything fell apart, and they came to the Lord. So we have this great history in these stories of rock and roll and contemporary music, and then the salvation of these people. So it's a really incredibly unique book, and we are just now being presented to the publishers, and that's my heart. I spend all my time on the road speaking too, but the road's getting rough these days, and I'm getting older, so it's not as easy as it used to be. So I think what my heart is eventually that I can reach people with the message of the Lord through my writing, as opposed to more than my speaking. And that's where my heart is.
The the Beatles' impact, it's been enduring for 50 years, and maybe like anything else. Any explanation on why, you think? And
why their thing has lasted and others didn't?
Yeah.
They were there was a lot to do with that. First of all, the Beatles had four distinct personalities. The Beatles had something for everybody. I mean, they were not alike the other, and so they gave the audience something really special to draw to. The songwriting was magic. Lennon, McCartney will probably become, you know, our Tchaikovsky's and Rachmaninoff's as the centuries pass, because they're just their writings, their songs were so powerful. The arrangements were things that people, that sound was like people never heard. So, and then what they did that kind of capped the whole thing off is they were a moment in what was happening with society at the time, and they were the answer to a lot of people's frustration and desperation at that time with the Vietnam War Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King assassination and all these things were going down. That they were a point of relief for everybody. And, you know, in the beginning, especially, it was really good, clean fun with them. You know, it was Moon Spoon June. It was the four mop tops. It was everything about it was just deliverance. And, of course, the youth, they gave the youth a place to go that they'd never gone before. They just kind of freed the youth from the old things. And, of course, all of that wasn't good. But, you know, it was just something that it could never happen again, because that point in our society will never happen quite like that. And so after them and Elvis, I don't think that anything like either one of them will ever happen again.
Well, you've been in the middle of a lot of it, Ken, and thankfully God's got a hold of your life and used your talents to share with others in powerful ways, and I know that's where your heart is. So we're we're glad for
He's got a hold of me. I just don't want him to let go.
Yes.
He's already promised he would. So.
you can just read some of Ken's thoughts, well written, in The Beatles, The Bible, and Bodega Bay, My Long and Winding Road, or if you want to check out one of his more recent ones, Stumbling on Open Ground, Love, God, Cancer, and Rock and Roll. That might be something you want to pass on to a friend as well. That'll be a good reminder of God's faithfulness in really tough times. Ken, good to visit with you, and wish you a great summer and wonderful walks on the beach.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Ken Mansfield joining us today here on Connecting Faith, just taking a little time to reflect on his journey, as he talks about his long and winding road. God doing a great work in his life, and he's used Ken in a mighty way to tell the story. You can find out, listen again online, myfaithradio.com.